You has come too. Damn it, that's terrible. Welcome to the Cosmatic Dog Charlotte Anime Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Spidey, and joining me today we have Biscuito.
Hi.
Gary.
Yo, yo, yo.
And Bowie.
Hello.
It's been a while since we've had you on, Bowie. How's it feel?
A lot better than last time. I don't have the plague this time, so.
Yeah, that's a plus. And here we are to discuss. Here we are to discuss episode 9, The World Is Not In Here, also known as A World Not Here, because Crunchyroll subs are terrible.
Can we just, like, take a moment, sit back,
this is
and think?
Aniplex.
Just think about it for a second. The world is not in here. Someone wrote that and thought, yeah, that's...
yeah, that got signed off. Somebody had to pitch that, and somebody had to go, you know what? Yeah, I agree.
Someone got paid to write those words.
I'm pretty sure it's just Google Translate.
It's machine translation.
We didn't check this time. We just kind of went with it.
They never check. It's just automatic. They have a bot to use the Google Translate for the title.
It's all machine translation.
There's a Crunchyroll translation bot.
It's Aniplex, by the way. We should make that clear. Aniplex is
Aniplex
something
that translation. Fine.
Yeah. So Crunchyroll's not to blame.
You get Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
Anyway, would you like to introduce the episode, Bowie?
Okay. On this week's episode of Improbable, the flashbacker Ace and the Whole You struggles with the age-old issue of how to dress to impress. Arriving fashionably late, You finds Now equipped with a ponytail of charisma +2, leading to much awkward blushing. Zien, despite sounding like a Metal Gear villain, commences their concert, and You mistakes it for a screamo concert. His thrashing and screaming is brought to a halt, presumably by a chair to the head. We're informed that the previous 8 episodes have all been dreamed up by You while hypnotized by WMP's drug-like visual options. We meet a bunch of random people, topped off by the introduction of the long-lost Nissan, a cross between Hyoin Kilma and Christopher Robin.
Wow, good shit.
Yeah, punch.
That was awesome. I'm going to listen to that again.
That was really fucking good.
That was a lot of stuff in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Down, because it was like 45 seconds when I wrote it the first time.
Yeah, I imagine. Good job, good job.
Proud of you. Bo, you got some biz points today.
You can track of those.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine.
He has a huge spreadsheet.
So, Bowie, what did you think of the episode?
Well, it was an episode. They decided to drop the bombshell that you think would be better served a little earlier, but, we got there, eventually.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a similar boat. That's, like, the first thing I thought when I watched it. Like, it was definitely a game changer, but this is episode 9, and we're 2/3 through the series, if not 3/4.
Like,
I guess it's
to me,
closer to 2/3.
It felt like if you're running a 2-core series, it felt like the halfway point episode, like right before the break in between the two halves of the series. Mm-hmm. This feels like sort of the episode where you leave off on and be like, okay, look forward to it coming, you know, next season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the cliffhanger episode. Yeah, I can see what you mean. God. Makes it. I am very curious if this was originally planned to be, like, too cool or not. Because it's not clear. If it was, then that's, like, a real shame, and then it's kind of like, it would explain why a lot of things feel so rushed.
There have been a lot of people, like, a lot of us already kind of knew that it would probably be 1-core, or, like, it was kind of basically confirmed 1-core, like, a while ago. But there are a lot of people now who are just now realizing that it's only 1-core, and they're like, oh, shit, like, wait, really?
We're in the final stretch!
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the point is that Maeda still can't write an anime.
Yeah.
It's a good improvement. Good improvement. But anyway, speaking more positively, I would say it is kind of weird that, you know, we had to watch baseball to get here, but now that we're here,
Hello music video.
I can say at the very least that the extent of what we've watched still isn't really fully fleshed out, because now we got to watch Brosuke explain what's going on or what has gone on. So we're getting there.
That's a pretty cool concept for an episode, like. just getting us thrown into an alternate reality of sorts where
I've said a lot of times that as we were watching the series up to this point, I kept saying, like, clearly, like, there's got to be the ace in the hole kind of thing going on, at least towards the end here, where something is going to happen towards the end that's going to alter how the previous episodes have been viewed, and that has finally happened. But like I said, we haven't really seen the extent of it just yet. So there may be more value to those previous episodes still, but we'll just have to see. I mean, I've kind of got my doubts about it, but it's a possibility.
Yeah. It's like, this is very much a pivotal point where finally we have an idea of where this series wants to go with itself. And I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it.
Or do we?
We more than any other time, because up until now it's been like, what is this series? Where are we going? Now I finally know, and it seems that that would be to go back and save Ayumi. Seems to be the implication there. I think Biz has some concerns about this.
I don't know, man. Okay, so let's just have a vote out of everyone here. Who hopes it fucking fails?
It's going to.
I hope it fails.
I kind of do.
Someone's gonna die.
Something's gonna give. The ultimate happy ending where everyone gets out okay. There's a good possibility of it happening, but I kind of don't want it to, because...
You know how, like, in the OP, how, like, everyone's super happy and watching the comet or whatever?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what, that's probably going to be the last episode, and I'm going to throw up.
Just Amy jumping in the air, all happy. Yeah, it's... I can't... It's very difficult to imagine a scenario where Amy doesn't get saved, but I really hope that we have some element of sacrifice involved. I was just looking at the opening lyrics, and it talks about stuff like, you know, who should I save, who should I leave behind, you know, do I have the right to make this decision? It really makes me think that Yu's going to be faced with a choice of, like, saving Ayumi and saving someone else, maybe. You know, like... Going back in time puts all this pressure on a person of like, oh, you can change how things turn out. And so maybe, like, he has to make a choice of who, you know, gets out okay. And that kind of dilemma could be some really interesting storytelling if they do it right.
I also want to go ahead and say that there's probably a pretty good probability that, I kind of want to stick to the idea of fate being a thing that's going to happen here, where, like, you know, how, like, Madamari was, like, running to try to save Ayumi. I was thinking, you know, what if this was like an integral, or like this was a pivotal moment in time where they knew it was going to happen, right? And like, she was like, oh, I gotta save her, and it didn't work. It was like, ah, oh, shit, I didn't save her. So I'm hoping, like, it'd be kind of cool if there's kind of a fate thing going on here, where like, not fate like the series, but fate as in the actual word, where like there's a possibility that maybe Ayumi is just perpetually fucked. And it's just not going to ever be safe.
Fixed point, yeah. Just,
I'm very hopeful that she doesn't get saved, because I was thinking it would be super cool, right, is if, like, okay, so people were really upset that, okay, it's really lame that we had this really important episode where Yu's kind of trying to overcome his grief, but it kind of seems kind of pointless now, right, because we're just going to go ahead and make everyone happy again. I was thinking it would be really nice for you to think more in the lines of kind of like maybe being too hopeful or stepping beyond what he's capable of.
Yeah.
And that would be a nice new kind of like narrative point to make, so that like maybe he's going to bite off more than he can chew and think, well, maybe I can get more. Maybe I can go further. Where he was like, at one point you thought maybe he was just fine with where he was and he can move on, you know, and become stronger after all of it. But now he's thinking more, getting kind of greedy, right? Where he's thinking, ah, I can use these powers to go back. So I think it'd be really nice kind of thing for him to like want to go back and get greedy, right? And then try to think, oh, I'm going to save Ayumi. And then it fail again. And then like him to get like kind of the double dose, like the double deuce of learning to have to move on.
It'd be very interesting, but it is kind of weird and they've kind of dug themselves into a difficult situation here. Because, like, I feel like they spent, like, whole two episodes on, like, Amy's death and the process of getting over it. And now it's like, oh, you don't need to get over it. You know, you can bring her back from the dead.
Yeah, which is, like, that's why I say, like, it would be such a good idea to, like, think for a second maybe Yu is going to get kind of, like, he's going to think, you know, that he's, you know, holier than thou, and he's going to think that he's got more power than that he says. Because, I mean, this power thing's kind of like, it's almost like a curse, right? So he's thinking, like, well, I'll go back and I'll save her, and then he's gonna get, like, smacked really hard by reality. That would actually be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
Well, I like the idea that, I like the idea, and it's sort of an inevitable comparison that people are gonna make, because it's the first one I made, is the idea, and I like it in time travel stories, is back in Steins Gate, the idea that the past is resistant to change. Not that you can just go back and change the past, but that the past is going to fight back against you and is going to try to cause the same events to happen. Because we see that in the original line, the first eight episodes, we see Ayumi die by her collapse power. And then we go back and we get this episode in flashback, and Ayumi almost dies by her collapse power again. And, well, really, it's because of her collapse power again that the scientists are going to get rid of her. And so,
and you could also look at Shunsuke, right, where he's like, Shunsuke looks like he's seen some shit, and now he doesn't see anything. So, like, I'm kind of expecting that we're going to see this next episode, and we're going to see just that, where he's going to be trying to do something, and it's just never going to work out. And he's like, oh, now Yu can do it, and maybe Yu can actually learn, hey, I should step back and just roll with what we've got, you know?
Speaking of serious shit and stuff, I feel like this episode did really badly with the mood. Like, the beginning and the end were completely different from the middle, where everything was all serious. Like, Yu wakes up, and then everyone's just, like, laughing again. And Shunsuke's gonna tell us his story, and it's gonna be all great, but that's not how it feels it should be to me.
It felt okay.
Maybe we should talk about Shunsuke a bit?
Yeah, I mean, lots of people said they feel like he's a kind of a slimy character. I would have to agree with that.
The way that he carries himself is weird. Like, whenever, even Yu, like, you can kind of assume that Yu's actually a pretty good judge of character at this point, because he's kind of been around with some interesting people, like now. Where he's just kind of like,
and he's in them.
He's being a lot more cautious. Like, he's kind of like now, where he doesn't really trust people right now. And so whenever he walks, because he's obviously confused about what's going on. So whenever he walks into that room and like, Shunsuke is just kind of like, oh, come give your brother a hug. I'm your brother. Oh, it's just weird to me. Like. He's just like, I don't fucking know you, man. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
well, like, the way the episode presents him even just sort of makes him feel something off. Because, you know, when we see him again, the second time, he's dressed head to toe in black. He's got this giant evil layer sort of vibe going with these giant useless fans and greeting
fucking
everywhere.
Men in Black shit,
and,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'll tell you, my first impression, well, not my first, it was actually the second time I watched the scene. The scene, what it reminded me of, the scene with, where Shunsuke is talking to him, it reminded me so much of from Star Wars, where Luke meets the Emperor and Vader, and Vader's like, yes, you know, you're my son.
Yeah, exactly!
Yeah.
That's just the vibe that Shunsuke was sort of giving off, like, you know, hey, come over to the
dark side. He was just kind of like, like, and then, like, the other thing is, like, now, like, runs over to him, like, so
you getting NTR'd.
Yeah.
She's so woody in this episode. She's like, what? This is, like, really unsettling. Like, that scene just is weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, and everything we'd seen of him before, in the key visual, and the opening, and even the scene right before where he's... like, he wakes up and he's like, I'm gonna change shit. And he's always seemed like he's gonna be like some big badass or something. And then we get to him and he's just like this huge ham. And
he seems like emotionally detached. Like, he doesn't have any investment in Yu's feelings at this point in time. It's just like, hey, you're here. It's about time you got here.
Yeah.
It almost feels like he's, and this is just, you know, initial impressions, but it kind of almost feels like that detachment, like it could be he's looking at you like, you know, hey, you're part of my plan, and I'm playing this brother card just to pull you into it a little bit.
Even now, says he's just like, he's your brother? Y'all don't look nothing like, which they don't look anything alike. It's kind of weird that they're brothers. They don't look very related. Then again, he kind of looks like a Yumi, I guess. So. Yu is adopted.
That's the climax.
God. You're adopted. End credits.
You mentioned like that he's like in this weird kind of lair out in the middle of nowhere after freaking cabbie dude. Okay, so Pooh is cute. Let's just say that right now.
He's mad sexy.
Mad sexy. And I wanted to say shout outs to the car driver guy the same guy?
I couldn't tell.
That's what I thought. Different. That's why I thought. Darker first. Hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's the same guy.
It was just. It was weird how they gave just that sort of like half a second freeze frame on him whenever he first showed up. Like they were like, "Hey, check this out."
Yeah, we've seen him. He's. I don't know. Anyways, he's cute too. But so like, I wanted to mention like obviously I've been talking about how like this whole school thing has been kind of concerning to me. So, like, if he owns the school, right, and they're, like, cool and stuff, then why the hell is he, like, this long car ride away? Because they leave that area, like, kind of, like, midday. They leave the hospital, and, like, they end up showing up at that place at, like, nightfall. So they've been driving for a while. And then they go through, like, these security doors, and then they go, like, five levels underground, and... It's just kind of this big, long hallway of nothing. That's kind of weird to me. I don't know. It's strange.
But they have a good reason to be hiding, you know. Maybe, like, the school's more of a public face, but, like, that's kind of their last fortress, I guess, against whatever threats they're facing.
Because I also wanted to bring up that whenever we're in the flashback and they're in the different blocks, so D-Block was, like, kind of like the punk powers. Nobody's really seems to be all that interesting to them.
Except they and had the Ayumi A-Block, experiment, though.
Well, Ayumi didn't
Ayumi,
have
yeah, didn't
any
have
powers
power
at
yet.
The time. So
but it's weird. It's weird that Shunsuke is, like, this huge big deal, but then his siblings are, like, nothing.
I think that they probably hadn't come to the conclusion. Well, that's probably why they were testing them so much. But anyways, yeah. So they move over to A-Block. And A-Block is like that high security shit. Like, everyone's super locked up. And the thing that was interesting is that A-Block is really big. So there's probably a lot of really powerful people out there. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Speaking of all the blocks, when we transition to C block and we meet the other three members of the Brotherhood, and then there's the one guy with the yellow hair, Shichiro, and they're making fun of him for not having a power yet, and he says, "I'm going to do something really important when I get my power," and then they're like. No, you're not. You're gonna die. And he's like, no, I'm not gonna die. I watched that
he
the second
both.
Time, and he did. That was like major foreshadowing.
He did both.
He set that death that flag and funny. He wrote it out.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Can we just comment that this security in this like prison is fucking terrible?
Yeah, there was some character armor going on with you when he was running away, and that guy was like, stop, halt, and he didn't shoot him for some reason.
Or like, hey, you, did you just trade something with someone else? It was like, no. Oh, okay then.
No. Okay, you're good.
That Metal Gear shit going on.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Oh, dear. Oh, well. There's like a lot of writing problems with this episode we've commented on. Another?
But
on
hey,
that
if it's
note.
Anything like this, if I was thinking, like, if we're talking about time leaping... And I was thinking that maybe the school that we're in is kind of, like, connected to that facility, right? Mm. So that was kind of the point I was trying to draw to.
Kind of similar thought.
Where the school is, like, this is this world's version of that place.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of, it's just nicer looking.
Or it's the underground base. Shunsuke's area.
Maybe. It was good. They could have swapped, and maybe now Shunsuke is the slimy dog.
Yeah. Mm. Just like on the note of like weird writing, why'd they keep Amy alive in this episode? But like, they show this scene where like there's the collapse, and then it's like, where's Ayumi? She's fine. It's like, oh, okay. Let's go to Shunsuke and rewrite the world. It's like, why did Ayumi need to be like... Why'd they point out that she's alive? Like, why couldn't she have just... Oh, yeah, she died in a collapse. Go change the world.
Because they had to do something really interesting. He was like... He tells you, okay, she's still alive. And that kind of makes him a little bit relieved for a second. And then he says, well, first they're going to dissect her. And then they're just going to dispose of her, which is a little bit more shocking than her just getting killed by her power. And it kind of sets up like the whole like idea of what the facility is doing and what the scientists are doing. It's actually a whole lot more kind of gruesome. And whenever he says that, you was like, oh, shit, like, I got to do something now. So I felt like that was definitely the reason that they bothered to mention that she was alive, just so that they could tell you that she's going to be basically tortured first, and then she'll die.
Yeah, that's what I sort of
I guess it paints a scientist in a worse light, yeah.
See,
I guess that's...
I looked at it like sense. That's what gave him his, you know, that was his sense of urgency there at the time, because,
yeah,
you know, just before that, he was talking about, okay, the plan's in place, but now when's the time to do it? Well, you don't get to wait for that time to do it now, because... You know, Ayumi's about to die. You have to go and do it now. Like, even if you know the world's gonna change, you know, you don't really want anybody to die a horrible death, even if you know they're coming back.
I guess that's true, yeah. That is true.
Speaking of this, he who is telling you all this stuff, there is a old he is the old researcher who we first see listening to classical music.
Yeah. Let's talk about this.
Continuous flow, mathematical perfection.
He had a name too, but I can't remember.
He did?
Did he?
Like, you see his name card?
Oh,
I did not.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Luckily, I'm right at that.
But obviously, I can't read the kanji. So.
Obviously, it wasn't important.
Huh? I don't know. He had a name.
But anyway,
yeah,
he has a name.
Interesting.
We don't know what it is.
We are not equipped with the tools.
Somebody
to know
tell
this.
Us.
Anyway,
so, go on. I guess a lot of people... Go ahead, Yarian, you were talking about.
Oh, I mean, I was just going to say that I watched it the second time, and I got the feeling that he was just kind of a plot device just to open the door for you. Like, who else was going to come and open the door for him? Like, well, we had,
a lot
had to meet the scientist first. Yeah, I'd like to hear what you were going to say.
Like, maybe that's true. Maybe he is kind of a plot device. But I feel like there's been a lot of weird kind of side characters that haven't really been all that important to our overarching thing, and they've just kind of been parts of the theme. But what he says is actually really interesting. There's a lot of, like, kind of foreshadowy stuff about what he's talking about. And we're going to talk about music here in a minute, too.
Sure. Let's go. The Biz Corner.
So, whenever we first see him, he's listening to classical music, right? And he says, well, it's continuous flow. It's mathematical perfection. Which is immediately interesting whenever you start thinking about the idea of time travel and time leaping, because it's not perfection. It's kind of a mess, right? So that's just an immediate kind of thing to draw from that. But whenever you ask him, he's just like, why are you here? What is this dude doing here? He answers with kind of like, it's almost like a riddle, or just kind of an interesting statement that he says, but he's like, ideas that challenge the orthodox are met with scorn.
Which is
basically what he's saying is that people who challenge the norm, like what most people agree with, are outcast, right? Because he brings up the idea of geocentric theory. And geocentric theory is the idea that the Earth is at the center of the universe. A lot of people believed that back in the day, and then there were a whole lot of other people that started to show up over time that actually challenged that theory, and... I believe it was Christians at the time highly believed that Earth was at the center of the universe, and they weren't very happy with it. And there was obviously a lot of widespread Christianity back in the day, so they would just kind of strip people of their power and just kind of throw them aside, saying, you know, you're an idiot, blah, 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 and other things.
Yeah.
And it's not just Christianity. I'm pretty sure there's even more about that in more previous
religions. No doubt.
Things.
Yeah.
But,
I'm sure a lot of religions...
It wasn't just at the Earth's the center of the universe. It's more so that the sun revolves around the Earth. which we see up in the sky, which is...
That was, well, that's kind of like the basis of the idea.
Right.
But, so anyways, he mentions that and says that people, he's like, well, what do you think happened to people who challenged the idea and thought of a more different way, thought maybe in a more heliocentric mindset? Well, obviously they were stripped of their power and, thrown aside. And he said, just like me, which is, that's what he's basically telling you. Well, I disagreed with how this place runs, and now I'm here listening to music because I find solace in it, or sanctuary, or whatever. So that's how we found out why he is where he is. We know right away that he's kind of on the side of the mutants, and we know that other people there probably don't like him very much.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole topic of geocentric stuff is just really interesting to me because obviously a major point in the series so far has been post-rock, which I'm going to bring up again. Haha. There is actually a post-metal band by the name of The Ocean, or The Ocean Collective, and just a few years ago they released two albums, and one of the albums was heliocentric and the other one was anthropocentric. And heliocentric is obviously the idea that the Earth actually revolves around the sun. And the entire concept of the album is, you know, talking about how, you know, the Earth revolves around the sun, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of the rise of that idea and all of the stuff that kind of came with it, where people were just kind of disagreeing with all of these philosophers and stuff. They're just like, oh, you're full of shit, blah, 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 Christianity, God, blah, 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 stuff like that. And how they were all kind of cast aside. So a really interesting album. And then the second album is anthropocentric, which is released alongside it. And anthropocentric is the idea that humans are the center of life and that they are the most significant part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously humans birthed the idea of religion, and just kind of like humans are kind of bringing up this idea. They're the ones that are actually talking about, you know, the worldviews and stuff, where like it's all kind of coming from them, right?
Like, what's that quote? Like, humans are the cosmos, like, learning about itself and analyzing itself.
Exactly, yeah. Which is really interesting. So, like, whenever I started kind of drawing comparisons between that and this, because I had to make a fun little post-rock comparison, I was thinking about humans being kind of a very kind of pivotal part of the series, obviously, because it's, as far as we can tell, it's kind of like this idea of evolution, or like maybe it's something else, but thinking about how humans have evolved so far and stuff, and how they actually work as a species is very essential as to how this idea of powers and stuff is being handled, because obviously humans aren't very happy with other humans having powers and stuff, so they're worried and they're studying them and locking them up and stuff. So I don't know, it's just an interesting little thing of comparison there. Thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, that was really cool. To me, the whole thing, geocentric thing, was just, like, keeping with the astronomy theme that we've had the whole series. But yeah, I think that's a really cool comparison you found there.
But anyways, so that's why I would say that I think the scientist is actually kind of cool, because he kind of brings, all the themes and kind of the interesting kind of viewer thinking back to it. So I kind of focused a lot of time thinking about what that scene was, because that scene was just really well directed.
Yeah, that was a nice scene.
And then the dude eventually does show up, and this is where we can start asking a lot of interesting questions. Is apparently this dude knows that you has plunder, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. And, like, the other thing that was kind of funny to me is, like, how the shit are we supposed to be assured that because he has this plunder power that apparently he's going to be able to... I mean, he does... Right? He does end up kind of saving things. But just how exactly does he just know that, oh, you're going to be able to save a Yumi, or you're going to be able to save us now because you can use your secret power, plunder? It's just kind of strange.
I mean, kind of seems like a last hope kind of thing.
I don't know. It is a pretty neat power.
The reason, well, the reason that it worked is because they actually had a plan in place. Like, if he didn't have people to run to and get their powers from, then it wouldn't really work. So, like, it's just really strange. Like, I feel like this scientist, I'm just going to throw out the speculation. I feel like this scientist knows about the time leaping and knows about their plan and everything. I feel like he's in on it.
You know, there's...
He knows more than he should, and it's strange.
There's an interesting theory that some people said that the scientist is Kumagami from the future.
What are these fucking stupid... I don't know.
I still like the idea that Kumagami was future you. And
yeah.
Looking at a Yumi underneath the rubble. This is sad. I think that's a cool idea. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that'd be hilarious. Everyone is actually you from a different time. Shunsuke is actually a Yumi from the future.
Anyway, yeah, he's definitely a very interesting character, and I agree that he knows more than he should, so I'm sure we'll see more of him in the future.
Well, just to throw on one more point on the end of that, because I sort of glossed over it the first time I watched it, but the second time I watched it, whenever he first stops you to talk to him, and he looks over and Ayumi's just now leaving the room, he says, oh, that's your sister. Yu's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, I see, I pity you. Like, he already, why does he pity them more than...
Yeah, he's got to know.
Like, he knows something that he shouldn't know.
He specifically has to know about the time travel thing. Like, he's just got to know. Because that's why I mentioned the whole thing about him apparently having plunder, him knowing that's going to work. Because the only way that plunder is beneficial there is to go and do the power. Like, he just has to know. It's just weird. Like, we're going to see him again.
Or this is just a huge plot hole.
We're going to see him again.
And on the note of plunder, have we reached an agreement that, like, he actually takes the powers and, like, doesn't give them back? Like, the people lose their powers?
Yes.
I do believe that he takes them.
Because there was a scene where, like, he takes the telepathy dude's power and then, like, he starts speaking out loud and he's, like, shocked. It's like, wait, what the hell did you do? And there's also the scene where... I forget his name. Blondie. Sorry, Death Flag Kun. He gets his power taken and then he dies because...
Yeah, I feel like that's the strongest evidence for...
Yeah, I thought, like, it could have just been bad timing. But I definitely feel like the telepathy
thing is pretty inclusive.
Because
he was stronger than him. Because the other guy gets super tired and he goes through walls. He is stronger, so he can go through multiple walls.
Yeah, he did comment on how he was, like, really exhausted and he just, like, collapsed on the floor as soon as he gets there. But yeah, I just wanted to comment on that. I mean, like, a lot of people might have overlooked that little detail, so I thought it would be good to shed some light on it. Because that means that every power user he's possessed up to this point has lost their power. So, no Thortography Dude, no Sky High Saito anymore.
But he also has all of those powers.
Which may be the real reason that Nao wanted him on her team, because she's trying to stop these guys from using their powers. What's the best way than to steal them?
Yeah, I think Cannon did bring that up, which was really cool.
Is there any powers he hasn't stolen, though?
Uses.
Yeah. I mean, you also have to remember that he didn't actually take the photography power because he didn't take over that guy. But anyway.
Yes, he did.
He took it over and threw the photo back to Nao.
Oh, you're right. Shit, I overlooked that part.
Yeah. Was there anyone else? That was the baseball guy. Yeah, he took all of them. Fuck. Except for like the main characters. Because I guess like Yu still has use for those characters, so she wants to make sure that. Sorry, Nao still has use for those characters, so she wants to make sure that Yu isn't, like, going around stealing their powers.
I mean, speaking of those other characters, there was, on one of the earlier podcasts, someone said, well, if we have these cool brotherhood characters that we're going to have to focus on, does that mean we're going to lose focus on the main characters? And sure enough, we've lost Jojiro and Yusa completely.
Sad.
Like, maybe they'll get
meanwhile, Minamari's cute. Just saying. A lot of cuties in this episode. The Brotherhood have good looks.
I like how you're calling all the guys cute and like everyone's like, lots of going now.
Minamari is not a dude.
Oh,
she's the memory erased.
No, Minamari is the blue haired guy.
Yeah.
That's a guy.
Is it? I thought it was the other.
No, the girl has the sleep power.
Yeah, sleep.
No, I thought she had the memory.
No, she put him to sleep, and then the other guy
catches her.
Oh, okay, so I got mixed up in writing then, because they never actually said her name, did they?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think they did,
Whenever they said the name, anyway. Just cute, though. That guy's cute, too. They're all cute.
Brotherhood got good looks. Okay. Now I've established that. I don't know whether we should keep that in or not, because we've been saying My Tomorrow this whole time. And get
No, it really is confusing. Like, I didn't actually know that.
Alright, now. Yeah, I don't know the girl's name, but yeah. Anyway, I guess we should talk about memories a bit, just touch on that.
Okay, so a lot of people were... Rightfully so, it's fair. A lot of people were talking about how it's kind of weird that you can actually remember some stuff that happens, even though he's not the one that actually does the time leaping.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fair, because you would think, well, that doesn't make sense. Only the person who does it should be able to retain their memories. Right, right?
Right.
Right. But so a few interesting contrasting points that I would bring up. First of all, we still don't technically really know the extent of what has happened. Because we do know that Yu has had his memory wiped in this current timeline.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know why or what he knew then. So, like, say, for example, they do the time leap thing, and then Oni-chan, Shunsuke, talks to everybody and tells them what happened, right? Tells them what happened. And then, for whatever reason, for safety purposes or who knows what, they decide to get rid of Yu. So then they wipe his memory. So he knew at one point during this timeline what happened, and then they wiped his memories.
Mm-hmm.
And now he remembers. Because maybe that's his, the Minamori guy, maybe that's his fault, is that his memory wipe stuff doesn't work that good.
Unless
there you go.
Minamori guy can also insert memories.
Ooh, wouldn't that be interesting? But anyways, so that's one thing. And another interesting thing would be that there's the idea that obviously because there's the idea of eyes, right? And that eyes are super integral to a lot of these characters' powers, specifically
yep.
Shunsuke's. But Shunsuke is blind! So if he doesn't, like, actually get light in his eyes to, like, trigger something in his eyes so that he can do his power, then obviously Yu's gonna have to be the one to do it. So... if Yu gets the power and then Yu makes a time leap, then now technically, whenever we're talking about time relativity and stuff, now Yu is actually a part of this whole time leaping thing.
So a paradox.
So now it actually makes sense for him to actually have some residual memories of something because we don't particularly know what all he's going to do. So you could say that technically, because of how time works, that or how we can assume that time works, that it would make sense for him to actually be able to know about, because he is a part of it.
Yeah, possibly. Like, he will time travel in the future, therefore he yep. has the ability to read between the world lines sort of thing.
Or, yeah. Well, I was thinking, like, if he time travels in the future and he, or goes to the past, maybe, and then he knows about it in the past, and then it becomes like a paradox, so he like has to go back and remember it so he can forget it so he can remember it again.
This is getting confusing.
You is the scientist.
This well, is getting confusing.
Yeah, you is everyone, so...
I'm pretty convinced that the time leap power just sends his consciousness back into his younger body. So, like, maybe, like, it's a few years, and Shunsuke travels back to his, like, slightly younger body, and it's like, okay, I remember everything now, it's time to change the future. And that's kind of where we are at now, where it's like all that stuff has happened and some things didn't pan out as well. So now Yu has to take up the reins and finish the job. But yeah, there's definitely like possibilities for why he has those memories. It's just, it's weird, but hopefully they'll explain it. We should talk about eyes because you like glossed over that, but we haven't really brought that up yet.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Just in the last episode, we had Sala is a blind character and explained that she traded away her eyesight to God for, or something. And now we're introduced to another character who's blind. And the interesting thing here is that we know that Shunsuke's power only activates when he has light entering his eyes. And I thought,
we also knew that he wasn't blind for a period of time. Just like
yeah, of course.
Once was.
Hmm. And like, we know that... It's an interesting thing, because, like, every time we see Yu use his power, we have, like, the, like, swirls around his eyes, and now we see Shunsuke's power, and the same thing happens, and he has, like, the concentric circles, which kind of look like stars. I don't know what you call that kind of photography. But, yeah, someone, like, commented, it's, like, a comment, like, you see it in the ending card, where it's, like, got this, the circles of stars.
Yeah, all the stars are kind of swirling around.
There's a name for it, I just don't know what it is. But yeah, like, there's this whole thing about eyes, I thought maybe that's not specific to Shunsuke's powers, that he's lost his eyesight and that he needs to be able to see to use it. Like, maybe that's for everybody. I mean, like, we see this little scene where Yu has to use his power on the telepathy guy, and it's like, I need to get a look at his face. And that's the only time you can use it, when they're looking at each other's eyes. And I'm thinking, okay, connection made. Eyes are definitely related to powers now. I am 100% convinced of that.
There's a lot of other interesting things, like Yusa and Misa. Obviously, the eyes turn red whenever she takes over. It's kind of
that's
weird.
True. That's true. Yeah.
I feel like there, and then obviously, you could kind of say now, one, you don't actually see her when she's doing things, but the other thing is that she, her power is just very directly related to eyesight,
mm-hmm.
Or very directly related to like that kind of weird blind spot that everyone has in their eye.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the only contrary one, I think, would be Jojiro, because whenever he does his jumpy fast thingy and he's going super slow-mo, ain't nothing happening to his eye.
Well, not that we see. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just... it's obviously
Remember whenever he goes to get them sandwiches and it's like slow-mo and he's like... and there's nothing going on there.
But it could just be like an animation thing where it's like, we see the eyes light up to show that, like, they're using their power, but it's not something that everyone actually sees. You know, it's more like a visual effect to demonstrate that, like, the eyes are, like, the trigger for this power. I don't know.
But, you know, there's an old belief...
I wouldn't say that's hard evidence against it.
There's an old belief that the eyes are the doors to the soul, or the windows to the soul.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. So, since the beginning, there's been a lot of us who have been thinking that the powers are directly related to your personality. And I think those could be connected, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's some hardcore Maidaism going on, too, because
yeah.
A lot of, like, he always writes about these kind of things that are kind of inexplicable. Talking about the ideas that are brought about through, like, religion or maybe some science fiction here and there and stuff like that. Like, whenever they brought up geocentrism or geocentric thoughts, and that just kind of, like, immediately I made that link to, like, humanity and stuff. So I was just kind of like, yep, this is a Maida story.
Yeah, definitely.
Talking about that, them hard-hitting subjects that people don't like talking about.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And so I got thinking, connecting the two and two together, we know that for some reason Yu's kept his memories of the past timeline, and we know that, you know, powers are sort of related to a person's mental state. I'm thinking, what if, along with his memories, he could actually bring his powers from world to world? Like, maybe all those powers he took in that lab, he might still have somewhere in there. I don't know. It's a possibility. I just thought I'd throw that out there. A little wild.
That'd be crazy.
Speculation. And then just one day, like, Yu's using his phasing power or his telepathy. It's just like, oh, I had these all along.
Maybe Yu is crazy, and that's where he got that picture of a Yumi, because he used photography to make it.
Oh my god. Oh dear.
So my last hope for this time leap thing is that I'm hoping that the reason we had all those crappy episodes like 4 and some people think 8 that just seem so boring and out of place is that they might become relevant in this time leap story. You know how you go back and
mm-hmm.
it's all of a sudden that thing that seems so insignificant suddenly becomes hugely important. That's just
that'd be nice.
My hope, I guess.
That's one of the really cool things about time travel stories, is you can make like really insignificant stuff like that seem really important in hindsight.
Yeah, and you can loop it all together too.
Steins Gate is a really good example of this.
Because obviously we're going to see, like, we have to see what happens to Yu and how he ends up where he ends up, not really knowing anything. So we're going to eventually wind up there.
Mm-hmm.
Should be cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've already spoken about my hopes and fears for the rest of the series, so... Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot that could happen. I just really
just
hope...
Just keep watching.
Yeah, just gonna have to keep watching. I'm just gonna have to, you know, remain hopeful that we can really pull through in these last few episodes, because despite its problems, I did have a lot of fun with this episode, and I wouldn't be opposed to this more, like, sort of action focus for the remaining
episodes. I feel like the next episode should, or at least they should be very, very careful to try and make this next episode really good.
Hmm.
Well, I definitely would have said that about all the episodes, but...
We're finally entering the first story arc.
It's the only story arc.
Yeah. We finally got one, guys. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Alright, so I guess I'll start by wrapping this episode up. Thanks for joining us again, and episode 10 will be airing shortly after we publish this, so in a few hours, so be sure to check that out. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. This has been the Kazumatsu.org Charlotte Anime Book Club podcast, here with your hosts Aspiety, Biscuit Dough, Yerian, and Bowie. We hope to see you again next week, but until then, take care.